Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the two-time award-winning Politically Direct. And I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to thank you all for tuning in here from wherever and how we're going to be doing so throughout the Garden State. And, of course, all my friends listening throughout the good old U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen. It's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic coming up here as we close out 2020, I'd love to hear from you. Do write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj, as well as my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram story, a little pop culture, pro wrestling, politics, motivational quotes, and everything else in between. I know you enjoy them. I appreciate all the, again, all the tons of likes and brand new followers each and every week on Instagram, so definitely check them out there. Also, ladies and gentlemen, hit me up on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Same thing. You know, obviously, many people enjoy my rants and my observations on Twitter, so if you have not started following me, what are you waiting for? Again, at Professor F. Uribe. Once again, special thanks to everybody for all the likes and, of course, brand new followers every week there on Twitter as well. And for all you Facebook subscribers, folks, again, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, as it is at 1,000 likes and counting there on the page. Tell your friends to do the same. Haven't been able to post on the page, ladies and gentlemen, due to a three-day suspension by Mark Zuckerberg and all the douchebags at Facebook. So certainly my ban will end in the middle of this week, so I'm excited about that. And I'll go back to posting and raising some hell on Facebook. So in the meantime, if you haven't checked out the page, like it. Once again, share it on your walls and tell all your friends about Politically Direct. And as a reminder, check out Insider NJ every day by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the city of New Jersey. Folks, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Certainly it starts at the top with our editor-in-chief, Max Lazzaro. Oftentimes his columns kind of annoy me, but I know I annoy him, so it kind of like, you know, it bounces out a little bit. But I have some great teammates with Insider NJ. It starts with Jay Lassiter, a very nice LGBT power list he came out with a couple weeks ago. So I know he was working hard on that for a few weeks. So shout out to Jay. I know he's very happy about weed being legal now in New Jersey this past Tuesday on Election Day, certainly with the ballot question passing by an overwhelming margin, by a percentage of 67-33. So New Jersey residents spoke very loudly to Trenton this past week as it pertained to the legalization of marijuana. And of course, you know, someone like Jay Lassiter, who's a very, very big proponent of it, certainly I'm sure is rejoicing, but his columns are definitely worth reading here on Insider NJ, folks. in addition to, listen, even Alan Steinberg. I mean, oftentimes Alan Steinberg is a little delusional and sometimes just insane. But, you know, apparently there is an audience for that. You know, he has a good readership. It's kind of frightening that there are that many delusional people in New Jersey like Alan. But, you know, again, that's the great thing about, you know, intellectual diversity, as they say in journalism, when it comes to having different columnists on and contributing. So, but nonetheless, I'm part of a great team at Insider NJ. So you definitely want to check out their page. Once again, www.insidernj.com. Once you do so, on upper right hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button on there. And guess what? Once you do, you click on it, you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So during the day, I guess when you are home, for any of you working from home right now due to the pandemic, and you're watching, let's say, cable news during the morning, maybe, you know, maybe you're watching, hopefully, Fox and Friends or Newsmax TV. Hopefully you're not watching CNN or MSNBC, but maybe, or you're watching the sports shows. You know, like me, I like to watch Undisputed on Fox Sports or maybe The Herd. Regardless of what you're doing, I'm pretty sure you're on your smartphone. So if you're on your smartphone, you're checking your email. So if you're checking your email, guess what? The Morning Intelligence Briefing will be right there waiting for you. And it will certainly, you know, provide a lot of illuminating content. Once again, informative columns, to say the very least, folks, and certainly everything that's going on in Jersey politics. Nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Once again, make sure you like them on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Twitter. Once again, the website, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, the opinions and views expressed every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, or our sponsors. I have to make that very clear. Oftentimes, my Insider NJ boss, Peter Nelly, gets flooded with emails and phone calls about something that I said that pissed off somebody on some day somewhere. So in any event, you know, I appreciate the creative control and the sort of the flexibility I get here with my Insider boss, who I know hates when I drop his name on live on the air. But Pete, thanks for always, you know, tolerating the plethora of phone calls you get of people just being a nuisance to you. So appreciate your support of the podcast. And folks, yes, you know, once again, happy Veterans Day to all our veterans, to our brave men and women serving. And so it is Veterans Week as it's celebrated throughout the country. Obviously, it's celebrated even during the NFL. As you all know, salute the service campaign that they engage in every year. And of course, you know, whether it's at the local, state, or national level, there's multiple ways to support our troops and support our veterans who do so much for us and certainly enable us to have the life that we have right now. Certainly there's a lot of chaos and pandemonium right now in our political climate. But one thing I think we can all agree on is the sacrifices and service that our veterans provide for us. And certainly I think we need to reciprocate that in what we do for them, whether it's funding the VA at the national level or just, again, you know, funding veterans groups here at the state level. It's something I've talked about on this program a lot. It's something that I'm hoping that Governor Murphy and the legislature can do in budgets. It's probably not the best allocation of resources, as we've seen that funding for veterans is still lacking as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, whatever we can do in terms of our part, I think goes a long way, folks, in recognizing their sacrifice and their service for us. Not just today, but really every day of the year. So once again, happy Veterans Day and really happy Veterans Week. It should really be Veterans Day every single day of the year as far as I'm concerned. But you get the gist of it, folks, and certainly a salute to all of them during this week. And once again, folks, you know, we got a great guest coming up in just a few moments. Certainly want to stick around for that. And I'll tell you something. As I said at the beginning of the broadcast, you know, I'm so proud to be a part of Insider NJ. I have the best teammates I could ever ask for. As I said before, you got some columnists out there, a little delusional. Like I said, Alan Steinberg sometimes is out of his mind. You know, we all know Max Pizarro sometimes can be way out in left field. But I'll tell you one guy who I always find to be very reasonable and very middle of the road, and just he's a great journalist. You know, so it when it comes to journalism and talking to great journalists, it takes one to know one. And certainly joining me here this week is the great Fred Snowflack here on Politically Direct. What's up, Freddie?
Thank you very much for the introduction. It was great.
Well, listen, you know, from one journalist to another, you know, we try to look out for each other and you know how it goes with that. So, Fred, I hope you're doing well, man. I appreciate being on the program today. And a lot to cover, certainly. We'll get to some national stuff. But let's just keep it in New Jersey for a little bit. I really want to get your thoughts because I know that, you know, people at Insider NJ, you know, different columnists have had their two cents on it. But we know last Tuesday here in New Jersey, voters told Trenton emphatically by a really large margin of 67% to 33% that marijuana needs to be legalized. This is a crusade of mine on this program. I've been talking about it since this program started 2 years ago. Having worked in the criminal justice system before entering academia, you know, this is where my mindset comes from. You know, the idea of, you know, we've been incarcerating black and brown people and even, you know, poor white people too for marijuana when, quite frankly, you know, there's a better use of resources. And I mean, I'm hoping that now that the voters have told the legislature this is what we want, let's hope the legislature can get on track. I know, again, you have great sources. What are you hearing out of Trenton?
Well, it's not so much what I'm hearing, it's what we're seeing. I think on just Monday, both the Assembly and the Senate held hearings, and after holding hearings again tomorrow, basically to put together the legislation that's needed to implement the legalization of marijuana. You know, there's a number of things have to be done, and they seem to be doing that. So I think that is happening.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. And, you know, I talked about it, Fred, on my Real Talk show on Monday night during my opening monologue. And listen, I think it's long overdue. Certainly New Jersey now becomes the 12th state in the country to legalize recreational marijuana for anyone over the age of 21. And listen, that's a great thing and we've heard these words, right? We've heard for social justice, racial justice, economic justice. That's all well and good. But Fred, I don't know about you, but as a homeowner and taxpayer, I'm really just nervous because whenever it seems that Trenton gets anywhere near a new revenue stream, let's be honest, man, it goes to, you know, blank. You know, I want to keep this show PG. I'm just concerned that, and as you alluded to, yes, Monday we start having hearings. It just seems that whether it's the gas tax, right? Wasn't the rationale 4 years ago about, oh, let's have a gas tax. It's to improve our roads. And we all know that some of the revenue generated have gone to non-road related projects and so on and so forth. It just seems like Trenton has this awful history of, yeah, we get a new revenue stream. Yay, that's awesome. But guess what? It may not go, the money may not go where it's supposed to go. Are you concerned too?
Well, I don't know what if you're saying is 100% correct. I think the gas tax revenue does go to fix the roads. I think it's dedicated to that purpose, unless you have information that I do not have. And I don't know if the marijuana revenue is dedicated to go to any one place. So I understand your point. You don't know what's going to happen to it. But, you know, with a lot of government spending, sometimes it comes down to if you like what the money is being spent on, you think it's doing it, think it's good. If you don't like it, you don't think it's good. I mean, that sounds overly simplistic, but I think that's what it comes down to.
No, I hear you, and you raise a great point on that. Again, I'm a skeptic, man, because it's not just about speaking as a journalist, but it's also about, you know, as an academic. You know, I'm a big policy guy, so when I'm always concerned when I hear about, well, especially this year. You know, obviously because of COVID, we've seen revenue streams lower than they have been because of the pandemic. But even previous years, and again, and Fred, to be fair, I don't want to pick on Phil Murphy because I think this is a problem that precedes Phil Murphy. I think the bone to pick I have is just the legislature and how skeptical I am of them when it comes to spending and taxes. And I think there's a body of work there that kind of, you know, gives me the right to feel that way.
No,
am I wrong?
To feel that way, absolutely. No, you have the right to feel that way, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
No, it's definitely something to keep an eye on it. And like I said, you know, Monday, obviously we saw State Senator Scutari, who I know for a fact has been one of the biggest voices, right, Fred, for some years now in New Jersey about pushing for legalized marijuana, about the fact of what it can do for a revenue stream. So, I mean, shout out to Nicholas Scutari. But even he, I think, has come under some grief in recent times, right, because of whether or not this can actually fly in the legislature, or am I off here?
No, you know what happened is, and I think the Democrats had no guts on this issue. I think all the polling showed, well, get the polling, I guess. I don't know if the polling didn't do very good in the presidential election, but so maybe I shouldn't have mentioned polling. But in that caveat, the polling did show that most of the residents supported legalizing marijuana, and the Democrats in the legislature who control the legislature could have voted this in a few years ago, but I didn't think they just were afraid to. So I mean, I don't know if that's Qatari's fault. I mean, if they didn't do that, they couldn't get enough people to come around. So it took the easier way out of putting it on the ballot. But I mean,
You're right about that. Because I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that in March of 2019, there was a vote in the legislature, and both chambers just came up short. And I know that this was a big.
I don't think there was. It may not have even been a vote, because I just didn't have the vote, so I didn't bring it up. Yeah.
Yeah. So, to me, if you recall, in the summer of 2017, I mean, then candidate Phil Murphy was adamant about making sure that, hey, legalizing marijuana is at the top of my agenda. And, you know, listen, sink or swim, as you said, I think moderate Democrats were nervous about taking a position here. I know where I live in Hudson County, in the 33rd legislative district, where I reside in the city, it's also my mayor. But I know that State Senator Brian Stack was not a big fan of that. And he's what many people consider to say a sort of a moderate Democrat. He's not so super liberal, thank God. But it just seems like a lot of Dems, again, because they control the legislature, both chambers, it just seemed that many of them want to sort of sit on this. And the problem, Fred, with that mentality is that in the meantime, we keep locking up black and brown people, bro.
No argument for me. I mean, they were afraid to do it. I mean, I think they were just, they were, I don't know. I mean, they just, I think they were afraid that people who voted, maybe they saw this as something that would be popular about 25-year-olds, but a lot of 25-year-olds don't vote. So I think that's what
they
were concerned about. Now, granted, we know this election is a different election. Many more people voted. One reason they voted, it was easier to vote. But I think that's so. But anyway, they did get a pass, and now I'm sure it's going to happen. So we'll see. We'll go from here.
Yeah, certainly. Listen, you bring up a great point. I mean, obviously, when it failed in March 2019, what would have made sense was to put it on the ballot in November 2019. But the problem with that ballot is that at the top of the ticket were just assembly seats in New Jersey. And as we all know, those don't get great turnouts. I think, State Senate President Steve Sweeney in the summer of 2019 said, we'll just put it on the ballot. And as we all know, turnout was very high in New Jersey for different reasons. And I think some that, we'll get to in a moment. But it's a wait and see here in New Jersey, though, Fred, about what's going to go on with marijuana. Another column that caught my eye from you this week, and I know you've been following the Anthony Bucco situation in the legislative district number 25 very closely. Had a great piece. And for my audience, if you haven't caught it, I mean, go to insidernj.com and check out Fred's columns. I mean, Fred's one of the best columnists in the state of New Jersey, as far as I'm concerned. But I did catch your column a couple days ago concerning the Anthony Bucco case. Any updates on that? What's the latest going on right now in the 25th legislative district?
Well, the update is Anthony Bucco is pulled ahead by about 3,000 votes. And my guess is he's going to win. I just don't know that. As I said, I'm just guessing that. It's also the assembly race is very close in that district, too. Yeah, I mean, like, for people who may not know exactly, this is Anthony, technically he's not a junior, but his father, they had different middle initials, but his father, Anthony Bucco, was who died just recently, and he was in the state senate for about 20 years, and he was kind of a local Morris County institution, and his son has replaced him in the senate, and now he's running for the state senate. So using the term dynasty might be a little bit too dramatic. It's not really a dynasty, because a dynasty might be over five generations. But anyway, in terms of like he's within the world of Morris County politics, if Buco gets defeated, that's a big deal. I mean, obviously it's a big deal for Morris County Republicans. But anyway, I, you know, there's still a lot of votes to be counted, but I'm just assuming that he was running, well, he's still running against a young lady, Rupenda Mehta, M-E-H-T-A, which is also the same name as the Republican Senate candidate, but she was basically leading until, like, the last round of votes were counted. So that doesn't mean she's not going to get the lead again. It's still only a few thousand votes. But, I mean, he's kind of – things are – the trend is going in his direction. So my hunch
well,
is going to him.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, again, and your column really outlines some numbers here again. When you – now, again, this is 2 days later from your original post, but certainly at the time – it showed that Buco leading Democrat Rupandi Mehta by 1,400 votes. You're saying it's larger now. It's about 3,000. Okay. For example, in the assembly race, it's Democrat Darcy Drager. Is Darcy Drager still leading the Republican incumbent,
no,
R.I. Dunn?
That's about 50-50 now.
Okay.
See,
okay,
last,
cool. Okay.
The last batch of votes that were counted were favorable to Republicans. I mean, you know, it's crazy the way it's being done. You know, I guess they got to count in the mail-in ballots, and I guess maybe they count 20,000 at a time, and this is just how it comes out.
Sure. Well, it's interesting. I mean, the county Democratic chair, Chip Robinson, who I've had on this program before, it's really interesting, isn't it, though, Fred? Because, you know, we've always looked at Morris County and a lot of the townships in Morris County and that district. The longest time, they were always super conservative and super red, and now we're seeing a really different trend now. I mean, we're seeing Democrats in what has been traditionally a very dependable county for Republicans, you know, changing colors, and I think that's something, again, I know it's a testament to Chip Robinson. I don't want to inflate his ego too much. I know him. He's a nice guy. He's a friend of mine, but it's really fascinating what's happened in just a few short years, though, in Morris County, though, Fred.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what I think. I think it's Donald Trump. I really do. I think that, you know, about 25, 30 years ago, the county had a lot of, as you say, it was always Republican. But, you know, within the Republican Party, there were a lot of shades. There were, like, a lot of moderate Republicans, what some people might derisively call rhinos, as in Republican in name only.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that a lot of these, quote-unquote, modern Republicans are just turned off by Mr. Trump. They're turned off by his style and also, you know, and some of his right-wing drift on the anti-abortion and sort of the trying to scale back environmental regulations and trying to be very hard on immigration. I think those things are something that even modern Republicans would support. I think... That's the reason. That's the real reason for the change, why Democrats won congressional seats 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think they won them, when I say I think they won them again this year, too, because we know they're in the lead. But votes, there's still votes that have to be counted, but they're probably going to win Mike Ushero or Tom Malinowski. That's my hunch. I think, you know, everything you read is that college-educated people, I mean, Donald Trump doesn't do well with college-educated people. And that kind of describes Morris County. It's affluent and it's educated. And I think that's why Republicans have lost. And I think that's why they're having trouble winning elections. And a lot of the towns used to be very red.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I mean, 2 days ago when you posted the article, it said so far Joe Biden 22,000 votes ahead of Donald Trump in Morris County, which, I mean... I mean, I'm sure that number's grown since then, but I mean, the idea of a Democrat leading Republican by that much larger margin in Morris County, again, is unheard of. And I think to your point about how polarizing the president has been to Republicans in that area, I mean, I think that's a valid point for certain. And, you know, you saw how it helped Mikey Sherrill. She easily won another term in the House of Representatives, and certainly she's someone that I think is a person to keep an eye on in New Jersey politics, as we know in the future, when it comes to even, and we'll get to some names later about gubernatorial races, not this year, but maybe in the foreseeable future. I know Mikey Sherrill is someone that is looked upon very favorably within the Democratic Party, right, statewide?
Oh, no, absolutely. No question about it.
No, definitely. I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on for sure. Fred, you know, another comment really caught my eye, and this is something that stands out for me, is the governor a couple of days ago, according to, you know, the illustrious one, you know, His Highness Governor Phil Murphy, apparently what we're seeing now is that indoor dining must be closing at 10 p.m. and can't resume until 5 in the morning. Outdoor dining can continue past 10 p.m. And to make it more, you know, sort of possible in cold weather,
they
restaurants
construct these bubbles.
I mean, Fred, I'm not trying to engage in semantics here, but this is where the governor gets himself in trouble. Like, all of a sudden, what, the virus doesn't exist at 10:10 in the evening, you know? And
okay,
I could
tell you the thinking. You and your listeners could decide if you buy it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, you're right. Obviously, the thinking is, like, even with indoor dining, mind you, indoor dining is limited to 25%, which is not very crowded. That means 25% at the bar, too. I don't know if you've been to a bar lately, but I mean, most of the bar stools can't sit at the bar, right? Only if you have like 40 bar stools, you can only use 30 of them. You can only use 10 of them. So I mean,
sure.
I think people are spread out as it is. But he says, and I think there's some logic here, that as we get later in the evening, when people might be on their fifth gin and tonic or their sixth beer, they kind of forget about the social distancing, and it gets crowded, and people forget about the rules, and that's that. And the health department claims, I say claim, I have no reason to dispute, but they have information that a lot of the spread, that there's a lot of restaurant employees like waiters and waitresses and bartenders who are coming down with the disease disproportionately. So that's why they want to limit close at 10 o'clock. I mean, or at least close the indoor dining at 10 o'clock. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, that all of these bars and restaurant people are coming down with the disease. But, I mean, that's the logic behind it. I don't know.
No, Fred, I get that. And I appreciate you breaking it down for us here and for my audience. So I think it's important to get all the facts out there and to sort of outline it. No, go on.
When you think of it, you know, when I first heard it, I figured, oh, it's not that big a deal. I mean, who goes out? I mean, it's closing. First of all, we know that outdoor dining is rather limited this time of year. Okay, we know that. But you figure, okay, so they close at 10 o'clock. I mean, who goes out to dinner at 11 o'clock? Probably not that many people. But then again, if you think of the bar scene, sometimes the bar scene with younger people doesn't get going to 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
That could be another blow to people who run restaurants and bars. I think that's the problem. That's the problem for them, and that's the political problem for the governor.
No, listen, Fred,
I'm just thinking to myself, like, you know, one thing about journalism, it's not 9 to 5, because there's a lot of things at night. I mean, I say there used to be a lot of things at night, because now they're on Zoom. But I mean, like, I many times, 2 or 3 nights a week, I would go to council meetings or political events and maybe go to some of my local bars to have a few beers and a hamburger at 10 o'clock, 10:30 at night. And they were always reasonably crowded. So, I mean, stuff like that you can't do anymore. I mean, that's I think, what the problem is.
I agree with that. And that's a great observation. And listen, I love that line, that journalism isn't 9 to 5. And again, as fellow journalists, I think we all know that this happens at any time of year, you know, when it comes to the institution of journalism. But for, you know, you raise a great point about the optics. And I know, at least, I mean, I don't know what county you live in. I live in Hudson County. So predominantly, like, I mean, I'm looking at Manhattan literally every day. And when I, you know, there are very limited venues here to go to. I know recently on Halloween I was out, and there was, you know, that many venues that are open along the water looking at Manhattan, you know, especially during this time of year. I mean, listen, right now it's 70 degrees in New Jersey in November. That's an anomaly. We normally don't see that on Veterans Day in New Jersey. Normally it's in the 50s, if not a little bit colder. we're fortunate enough to, you know, have warm weather still today. And I think that's what's prompting people to say, listen, this is an unseasonably warm fall, per se, and they want to be out. And at least, you know, where I live in Hudson County, there are so many outdoor venues where people want to go out and eat, and they can't. And I think that's where a lot of the outrage on social media, and I understand that, you know, people oftentimes, you know, we live in this now, instant gratification society, Fred. But I know at least where I live up here in Hudson County, in, you know, southern Bergen County, a lot of people are sort of dismayed by the fact of like, listen, you know, maybe I do want to grab a late meal, you know, and I want to be outside, or I want to do that. And the fact that, you know, again, I think it goes originally to the point of many people are looking at Governor Murphy as, hey, this is a little draconian. It seems a little, I mean, I hate to use the word tyrannical because that word is thrown around very irresponsibly. I think people just look at it as like, this is a little harsh. It's hurting a lot of businesses that are barely staying alive. And now that the winter months are coming, this might be the nail in the coffin. And this might really continue to plunge the economy in New Jersey into oblivion, Fred. I think that's what a lot of people are scared about.
No, that's definitely a possibility. And actually, I live in Morris County, by the way. You mentioned, you know.
Okay.
And you live in Union City, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm right
that's
by,
where
you
I
know,
grew up, so I'm well familiar with Union City. So.
Yeah. No, I remember on your previous episode, you mentioned that, yeah, you're a Hudson County kid. And, you know, Fred, it's interesting because.
But anyway, getting back to your point, I mean, Phil Murphy's approval ratings were very high. I mean, like beginning back in the spring, I think people liked the fact that he seemed to be in charge and he took the necessary steps. But I don't know about now. And it's not an easy thing because, you know, suddenly the numbers in New Jersey are not that good anymore. There are more people getting the disease, and there's more people being hospitalized. I think it is, you could say, pandemic fatigue. That's what it is. I mean, a lot of people may have put their guard down. And I know that we'll see how this turns out. I mean, this could – obviously, yeah, two things could happen with this, with the bars. Number one, it may not slow the spread of the disease. And number two, it could hurt Murphy politically.
Absolutely. And speaking of Murphy and sort of the impact this might have politically, I mean, I've gone on record on this program and I've talked to other journalists. And, you know, Fred, it seems that he's consolidated a lot of support in the North from Carl DiVincenzo, Mayor Ross Barak out of Newark. I forgot the guy in Patterson. I mean,
Andre
I don't know what the
Sayer.
Hell his name is. Yeah, okay, there you go.
Andre Sayer,
okay. We know Mayor Stephen Phillip in Jersey City has pledged his allegiance to Phil Murphy. And it seems like he's consolidated a lot of power, especially with John Curry being reelected to be the chair of the state Democratic Party. You know, maybe a year or two ago, the whispers of someone like a Norcross or a Steve Sweeney maybe challenging him, I think, is dead. I think the governor clearly has an overwhelming support within the Democratic Party. But it seems, though, Fred, going into next year, again, and I understand about the approval ratings. I think a lot of people, you know, I don't know who they're polling. I don't know if they're polling his cousins or family members or, you know, maybe registered Democrats. I know a lot of people in New Jersey that are not happy with Phil Murphy. That doesn't mean it's going to translate into Phil Murphy being in trouble politically, because I think that his path to reelection looks pretty smooth. And the reason I say this is because, again, no disrespect to Jack Cittarelli. Nice guy, friend of mine. He's been on this program multiple times. I just don't know if someone like Jack Cittarelli can have the necessary political capital, Fred, to challenge him. And the reason I say that is because now, irrespective of what we think of him now, because my opinion of Chris Christie is very low in 2020, but in the summer of 2009, that, you know, Chris Christie 2009 character doesn't seem to be anyone on the horizon. That's somebody that I think could take out Bill Murphy. I just don't think that person is around now. What do you think?
Okay, you're right. Let's keep things in mind. Democrats have not insurmountable. They got a huge lead in registration.
Yes.
Like a million votes. I mean, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go back, Christie was kind of, I've said this a few times, Christie was sort of like the guy in the white hat. He was in the U.S. Attorney's Office. He was putting crooked politicians in jail. I mean, that appeals to people. I mean, a lot of people are cynical. Yeah. They think all politicians are crooked. But here was a guy who was putting crooked politicians in jail, and I think that he looked very good. And I think and John Corzine wasn't a very good governor, and he wasn't a very good candidate. And that helped, too. Now, I don't know if Murphy's probably a better governor, and he could be a better candidate, too. But, yeah, I don't know. It's so you really need a really it's tough to see. I don't see someone like Jack Citarelli and his other name, Doug Steinhardt, has been mentioned, a chair of the Republican Party. Even John Bramnick. John Bramnick probably has the most name recognition, but I don't even think that goes very far.
Well, Fred, it's interesting you bring up Doug Steinhardt, and I'll get to some other names that I've heard whispers about in a moment. But this is – and I've had Doug on the show, so I don't want to be disrespectful to Doug Steinhardt. He's a nice guy. He's been a gentleman to me coming on here. But this is the problem, I think, with the Republican Party in New Jersey, where last November, yes, he's the chair of the Republican Party, and yes, we made some gains in the legislature. We had Michael Testa win in Legislative District 1. I think there was a couple of assembly seats that went red. By and large, you know, obviously still both chambers are overwhelmingly blue. And listen, to his credit, Doug Steinhardt had every right to beat his chest, and rightfully so. The problem, though, is that a year later, next, you know, short of Jeff Van Drew, who, let's be honest, you know, a lot of that is just from South Jersey work, you know, Mike Testa again, other operatives, you know, let's be honest. I mean, where I live in Hudson County, I mean, that congressional seat was safe. Albie Osiris was in no danger of losing. But when it trickled down and you move a little bit more west and south, you know, Bill Pascrell, I mean, again, his challenger, Billy Premp, was a nice guy, nice kid. I think he's got a great future. I think he's going to remain relevant in New Jersey for years to come. I'm sure he'll take another stab at it in 2022. But, you know, Mikey Sherrill's Republican challenger didn't raise any money. Then you move down south. You know, you go into the Malinowski-Tom Kane Jr. race. It just seems that those candidates should have raised more money. And I hate to say it, Fred, that falls on the chairman of the Republican Party, and that's Doug Steinhardt. So, you know, you can't be celebrating, you know, spiking the football in the end zone in 2019, and then when you get creamed in 2020, you can't go quiet. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
I know. Tom Kane did raise a lot of money. And I mean, I don't know. That race is only about 14,000 votes apart at the moment. I don't know how many votes there are still to be counted. I don't think Tom Kane wins, but that's reasonably close. Yeah, mm-hmm. I never thought Rosemary Becky, she took an odd position. She tried to say Mikey Sherrill is a radical leftist, and she just isn't. I mean, you could say mm-hmm. that, but it just isn't true. And I don't mm-hmm. think that didn't wash with like moderates. I mean, it could enthuse like a Republican. You need more than a Republican base to win.
That's fair. But again, as you move down south, I think, you know, Richter didn't raise as much money. I think my sources as a journalist tell me that Richter didn't have as much of an enthusiasm around his candidacy as, let's say, Jeff Van Drew or others. Mm-hmm. And I think that ended up costing him. Because I'll be honest with you, Andy Kim is nothing to write home about. I think Andy Kim is a guy who sides with Nancy Pelosi, clearly, with the votes. You can look at his voting record. I mean, I wouldn't call him a crazy radical leftist, but he's really, really left. I mean, there's nothing moderate about Andy Kim. And in that part of Jersey, I was really surprised that, you know, he beat Richter. I thought he was going to win anyway. I just didn't think he was going to beat Richter by the margin he beat him. And that was surprising. So it kind of, you know, makes me think of, you know, if Doug Steinhardt is really thinking about running in the primary, I think he has to kind of take a step back and say, wait a minute, what is my record as chair? And is this something that's going to come back to haunt me? And I think with a lot of registered Republicans, Fred, they might look at Doug Steinhardt and say, you know what, you're trying, but stick to being chair. I think you're being a little too presumptuous, a little overzealous, thinking you could run for governor. That's what I hear, Fred.
Right about that, yeah. Excellent. How about John Bramnick?
Well, I'll tell you right now, here's a name that I've heard a lot, and he's a guy, and listen, and maybe, you know, as soon as people hear this episode, people will be like, oh, well, Fernando's a mark for this guy and whatever. Listen, I'm a big fan of State Senator Michael Testa. You know, he's been on this podcast mm-hmm. before. He's been on my studio show. I like Michael. I know he's a little green politically. I get that. I get that cynicism that surrounds his name about, oh, well, you know, should he run or not? Listen, he's a very vocal state senator. I think he has a great following in South Jersey. Again, listen, I'll be honest, though, Fred. I think the variable here is what happens in these next few months with this pandemic. It seems like the governor might initiate another complete shutdown. And if that's the case, Fred, what are New Jersey voters going to look at in 2021 and say, wait a minute, you know, there are Democrats, because every assembly seat is up for grabs, every state senate seat is up for grabs. Could this be the straw that breaks the camel's back where people say, hey, there are Democrats enabling this governor to do this. He's killing the economy. And, you know, is that enough to spark outrage? I don't know, Fred. I think that might be something to look out for.
My hunch is that I don't think there will be another lockdown. That's my thinking. For the exact reason you just said. I mean, unless things are really, unless we have 300 people dying a day again. I'm not trying to be funny, but I don't think there'll be another lockdown unless things really, really, really get very, very severe again.
I hear you, and I'm with you on that. And again, I'm not sure if Michael Testa would want to test the waters and run, but I keep hearing his name all the time, Fred.
I'm just thinking out loud. I mean, granted, he's from South Jersey, which is not the most, which is not really the popular population centers of the state. Mm-hmm. But he's also a new face and he's a young guy, and I think that could be to his advantage.
Listen, it's something to keep an eye on, but as we all know, again, Governor Murphy can fundraise. He's got the support of the Democratic Party, and we'll see. Again, listen, we're going to see what happens in court coming up. I know it's our next story we're going to cover, but we'll see who's the president on January 20th. And that could also have an impact in terms of the support that Murphy will get. If the president gets somehow the courts can overturn this and he gets reelected, we'll see. If it's indeed Joe Biden, God help us, then we'll see what impact it'll have on Phil Murphy. I don't think, listen, as I said to people this past week who, like, my phone blew up and were saying, Fernando, you know, what do you think? I'm like, listen. Regardless of who won on November 3rd, you know, I still have to go to work. I still have to teach online. I still have to go, you know, make my money, pay my bills, save whatever. So life goes on for me. However, regardless of who's president, Fred, as I said to a lot of people online, New Jersey's still in a really bad position. New Jersey is terribly run, okay? I look at my friends that live in the great state of Texas, in the great state of Florida, and I'll tell you right now, I would burn a Cowboys jersey right now to have either of those governors right now, as opposed to what we have here and what we have in New York. I mean, that's just how I feel. I think a lot of New Jerseyans, Fred, I think more and more are coming out with that same mantra. I'm not saying it translates into Phil Murphy getting defeated. It doesn't. But I think there are a lot of people online, especially on social media, that are not happy with Phil Murphy right now.
No, you can make that point, but I don't know. I don't know if social media is really indicative of, I mean, I don't know if that encompasses a representative section of the entire state.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know. I still think there'd be enough people who say, look, this is a serious disease and you got to take drastic steps. And if it means closing down, that's something we have to do. Now, it doesn't mean we have to do it again. I'm talking about a few months ago. I realize this cuts into political lines. I mean, up to now, Republicans have been, at least generally speaking, seem to be more into wanting to totally reopen the state than Democrats. That just seems to be the way it pans out.
No, it does. And listen, I mean, over the summer, I had State Senator Vin Gopal, a Democrat out of, you know, the Jersey Shore area, who, you know, again, you know, I applaud him. He's a guy that is willing to, you know, call out the governor and disagree with him publicly, which I think, you know, you admire that sort of political courage. You even had Jersey City Mayor Stephen Phillip yesterday showing some disagreement.
About the situation.
Yep. Exactly. So, I mean, it's refreshing to see that. well, I mean, God forbid, we hope it doesn't happen about another complete shutdown. But in fairness, though, too, Fred, I mean, there's a lot more we know today on November 3rd as opposed to March 3rd about the virus. I think we've learned a lot. I think we've taken a lot of precautions, and I think there's a lot of things in mechanisms in place that put us in a better position now, which is why I'm like, if another shutdown comes, Fred, I mean, I think it could be catastrophic for New Jersey, man.
No, that's a legitimate point. That's why I don't think there'll be another shutdown unless something really major happens that's bad. That's my hunch.
Sure, yeah, exactly. Well, like you said, yeah, like, unless there's like this ridiculous spike, it certainly remains to be seen. Obviously, Fred, Election Day has come and gone. We're seeing that the courts might have to get involved at some point. Lawsuits are being filed. You had a great piece yesterday on Insider Rand Jay. I love the title. Where, you know, guys, the two elections are not remotely the same. And for my audience who maybe aren't in front of the column right now, I'll just read to my audience the first couple of sentences here. You wrote, "Didn't the networks call Florida for Gore? That was one of the comments I heard from the president's supporters last weekend at a Trump rally in Bedminster. The point was obvious. The media can't be wrong. Running with that theme, I've seen on Republicans' social media sites what purports to be a screenshot of the network's call in 2000 for Al Gore. There's a blue and red colored map of the United States, and Gore is the projected winner with 271 electoral votes. Quote, remember when the media called this election is the heading? Actually, I do not remember that because it never happened. For those of us who were around in 2000, it didn't seem that long ago, but 20 years is 20 years. There are probably many people new to politics who are too young to remember 2000 or who weren't paying attention. Bottom line, nobody projected Gore the overall winner over George W. Bush. That aforementioned map is a work of fiction. Here's what happened. On election night, and obviously too early, the networks called Florida for Gore. That was a big deal, as it is today. Florida continues to be a key battleground state. But that call was retracted just a few hours later and played no role in how the networks ultimately projected the race. Most people know how things transpired." So, again, great column. And folks, again, if you haven't had a chance to watch it, I mean, if you read the column, read it on Insider NJ. Fred, again, continues to write immaculately every single day for Insider. But, Fred, you know, to your point about social media sites, that seems to be a big narrative now, where I think that's the hope that many conservatives and Republicans have.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I mean, it is.
What do you think?
I understand. First of all, were you following things 20 years ago? You're a young guy.
Well, believe it or not, Fred, I mean, I appreciate you. I'm 45. I remember it vividly. Yeah, I was in my 20s. I remember it, yeah. So, but
okay,
thank
well,
you. That's very kind.
you might have been just out drinking if you're in your 20s. You never know about that. I don't know.
No, I remember.
About the Cowboys.
I remember that race vividly. I actually did a paper in graduate school about the election in 2000. but it was very interesting.
Some of the Trump supporters are using that as an example. Hey, the media screwed up, and maybe they're screwing up again. Now, in a way, the media did screw up because they called Florida for Al Gore, but that was one state, and they did retract it very quickly. I mean, they retracted I was still remembering the Daily Record newsroom, and I think the call came in like 9 o'clock, which is relatively early, and that was a big deal. But then by an hour or so later, they went back to too close to call. But, I mean, no one said Al Gore's – no one projected Al Gore was going to be the winner. That simply didn't happen. And you know, the big difference is that I know that we'll see what happens, and maybe Trump supporters could spin it the way they want. But, I mean, he being Biden is almost 50,000 votes ahead in Pennsylvania. Like more than 100,000 votes ahead in Michigan. I mean, and Georgia is not even in the picture yet, but he's leading in Georgia. I mean, a recount don't really change things that much. The situation is not comparable at all. I mean, Florida was 500 votes, literally.
Yeah,
I mean, that's you can't really compare the two elections. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, and the reason I brought up the column is because I noticed that it's been shared a lot on social media. I mean, rightfully so. You're a great writer. I love the way you break things down. But do you think, Fred, though, from your sources you talk to, I mean, I talk to sources, it's really hard to get a picture here, isn't it, about what's going to happen when this goes to court? Because, listen, at some point in December, right, December 14th, I believe, is the date, that's when states have to certify their votes. So I'm assuming that the president's lawyers are hard at work here. They are going to court. They're filing lawsuits. I mean, obviously, seeing Rudy Giuliani leading a legal team scares the hell out of me because I love Rudy. I grew up here. I saw how great Rudy was as a mayor and what he did to really improve New York City. But the problem, though, is, though, Fred, is today's Rudy Giuliani practicing law scares the hell out of me. I mean, I would not want Rudy defending me at a traffic ticket in municipal court, okay? Much less
that's
the
a nice
team.
Way. That's a nice way of saying it comes across as a raving lunatic. That's what you said.
Well, again, you know, listen, there was a time when Rudy Giuliani was a legal genius. He was a brilliant U.S. attorney. He did a lot to, you know, put members of the mob away. He was a great mayor as far as I'm concerned. Again, I grew up here in Hudson County. I saw firsthand how New York City really improved under his leadership. But now, you know, the fact of him leading a legal team scares the hell out of me. And I don't know, at least from sources I talk to, like, one thing is social media, Fred. And we see memes, we see Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. We see people posting stuff constantly. I can't right now because I'm on a 3-day Facebook suspension, so I can't post anything. But what I'm reading from people, Fred, is it seems like there's still an element of hope. Is that realistic, or on January 20th, are we saying the 46th president will be Joseph Biden?
I think both things you said could be true. I mean, I think Joe Biden will be the president, but I could see that loyal Trump supporters are still going to have hope. I mean, I can't, and I'm not going to criticize them for that. I mean, if you really feel strongly in your candidate and you want your candidate to do everything possible to try to win. I think the problem is, from what I read, a lot of lawsuits, and granted, I say so far, it's only a few days. I don't know how far some are getting. A lot have been already dismissed. You know this, in any election, especially growing up in Hudson County, it's very easy to say, hey, the election is fixed in terms of people just chatting. But, you know, sometimes it's a little harder to actually document cases of fixing that are taking place. And what does that mean, it's fixed? Does it mean 500 people voted illegally? Well, okay, 500 people. The spread here is like 45,000. So what does that mean? You know, it's a little, I don't know, how could you overturn an election that isn't all that close? That's the challenge.
Well, you're right.
And
about,
I mean,
that.
That's
no, you're right about
challenge.
That.
Now, I know. Yeah.
No, you're right about that. And I think that's where it becomes dicey. And I think from, again, I'm not an attorney. I have no expertise in election law, so I can't speak in that capacity. But as an academic, what I would say is it seems where people are trying to make the argument that because of the pandemic, a lot of these states use this opportunity to sort of push vote by mail. And Fred, to your point, you know, I grew up in Hudson County. You know, there's still that reputation. They're like, oh, is there voter fraud? Of course there is, because look at – the attempts at voter fraud. Excuse me. Let me phrase it better. Or the attempts at voter fraud. I mean, look what happened in Hoboken last year with a local operative, you know, going to federal court, right, and obviously being arrested. And those cases are real. But it seems that now with this, I think it just continues to be political. I think people might just say, hey, voting by mail is ripe for fraud or for some chicanery. Is that still a valid belief, or is that still like a valid thought process, when it comes to that, Fred?
Well, it could be a valid belief by some people. I don't know how true it is, though. I mean, the thing is that I think the part of the argument is that a whole voting by mail should not have happened. And I think they'd be arguing that this is something that the states did illegally or improperly. I don't know how far you go with that, because there are states don't really have control on how to run an election. I just don't see that going very far.
No, I hear that.
I mean,
doesn't mean
they're not going to try. But.
No, I hear you, and I'm with you on that. And I think also it's the mentality of, and again, maybe it just goes back to being political or ideological with people where, hey, we can stand online to go to the supermarket. We can stand online to go wherever, but we can't vote in person. And
that's a legitimate point too. But that doesn't mean that the votes are improper.
No, I hear that. I understand that. And, yeah. And I think this is where it gets ultimately again ideological, you know, coming into the end result. And we may not know the results for a couple of weeks. Who knows? This might drag past Thanksgiving, right? This might drag into December. Who knows? I mean, we'll ultimately see, you know, what the end result will be. But I think, Fred, listen, I think at the end of the day, regardless of who's declared the winner ultimately, who's certified, I think there's a lot of work to be done by whoever is going to be the president in January. Because let's be honest, there are 70 million people that just don't see eye to eye with the other 70 million plus. And I think as I've been trying to get this message across to friends of mine who text me, call me, or, you know, go on my social media, is listen, if it is indeed Joe Biden, and listen, I don't apologize for being a conservative guy, Fred, one thing you will not see on my social media is I'm not going to be like some of these idiots that spent the last 4 years with not my president, this and that, resist. I'm not one of these idiots that did that. Okay. I spend the last 4 years on my social media, on my media programs, calling out this lunacy. And, you know, I'm not going to be a hypocrite now and practice it when I spent 4 years denouncing the left in New Jersey on my media program. So I'm not going to do that, number one. Number two, it just seems that whoever is going to be the president to be a better effort to talk to the other side and say, okay, wait a minute. Okay, we clearly don't agree. Why? And I think that's the most rational course of action. Am I wrong?
No, I agree with that. I think in his initial comments, Joe Biden has tried to say things like that. I would argue that I don't know if Donald Trump really attempted to do that. He just tried to fire up his base most of the time. I think he never really expanded his base at all. I think that turned out to be a fatal problem. I mean, he obviously had his loyal supporters on his side, but I don't know if he got anybody else. So
I saw some numbers today before we pre-recorded today. There was some improvement in terms of turnout among blacks and Hispanics. I'm not saying overwhelmingly, but I mean, the percentages were higher than 4 years ago for him.
And I
think that's still kind
You mean
of,
Hispanics and blacks supporting Republicans?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Because it wasn't just for the president. It was also for House seats, it was also for Senate seats, you know, so we saw some improvement there in terms of support. Though, Fred, what's interesting, I think, moving forward, and I would argue this, I think that both, listen, post-Trump, whenever that is, whether it's January or January 2025, we don't know, or even with Joe Biden and the Democrat Party, it just seems that there has to be a hard reboot, I think, for both parties when it comes to ideology and platforms. Because, again, this is the academic in me now talking policy. What I'm terrified about, what I'm concerned about, is just the implementation of things that might not be in everyone's best interest economically or along the social fabric. And I think that's where both parties need to do a hard reboot in terms of their message. Do you see it that way too?
I don't really know about that. I mean, I think most Democrats kind of agree with Joe Biden. I don't know when you say reboot on the messaging. I don't know about that.
Okay. The reason I ask is because it just seems that, and again, as I tell a lot of my friends and on social media here, I mean, you know, thankfully, you know, a lot of the country doesn't think the way people think in California and New York and New Jersey. I mean, thankfully, but clearly it seems that there's a good portion of the country that is embracing more center left or liberal policies. I mean, we'll see what's implemented in January with whoever wins the presidency. It looks right now like the Senate might stay with the Republican Party. Republicans gained some seats in the House, not enough to win a majority.
Yep. But it seems
like they're putting themselves in a good position to win back the House in 2022 based on the gains that they made.
But let's face it, every election is a game within itself.
Sure. No, absolutely. Fred, before I let you go, I mean, listen, you're always a delight on this program. You're a wealth of information, and you certainly
thank you so much.
No, you definitely are. Before I let you go, though, anything we should keep an eye out for here in New Jersey? I know you don't want to give spoilers about your columns, but any topics or, you know, things to keep an eye on? Is the Buco race still something to keep an eye on?
Well, yeah, anything
else?
Spoilers, because this is nothing is all that overly sensitive.
Oh,
but I'll be writing about marijuana. I mentioned this, there's still legislative committee hearings going on tomorrow, so I'll be writing about that. And, of course, I'll write about the Buco race, and I'll write about anything else that happens. I mean, it's been interesting to see what happens with Mr. Trump and his loyal supporters. I went to a Trump rally last week. Last weekend, obviously, people not accepting the election result and wanting him to fight on. I'll just see there might be more of those. So, we'll just see how things are going to play out.
No, definitely. And we know there's a rally in Washington, D.C. this Saturday at 12
yes,
p.m.
Yes, you
going
to go?
No, I'm not. I have things to do at home. I have to grade some exams. I have to work on my material for my podcast next week, and here as well. But before I let you go, though, Fred, if I remember correctly, I think you're a Mets fan, right?
Indeed, I am. I'm very happy.
Okay.
We'll see what happens.
So,
you're a
I
Mets
was just
fan
about to
too,
say,
right?
No, I'm a Yankee fan, but the reason I ask you is you have to be absolutely delighted at the fact that Stevie Cohen.
I don't know about absolutely. We'll just see how things happen. But finally, it looks like they have an owner who has some concept of trying to spend resources to improve the team, and we'll see what happens. Granted, just because you're spending money doesn't mean you spend it wisely, but at least willingness to spend is a step in the right direction. So you already see much more. Yeah.
No, Fred, listen, you don't have to tell me about spending money and spending money wisely. As a Yankee fan, there's a lot of bad contracts we've had in recent years. So trust me, I know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to spending for the sake of spending. Do you think Stevie Cohen is going to maybe just be more aggressive in free agency, or do you think he has to
stay around? Yes, I would think so, So we're going to find out fairly soon. If you remember, I'm also a loyal fan of the New York Jets.
Okay, that's right, yeah. You know, and
well, having won a game, as you well know.
Yeah, no, listen, my father is a loyal and devoted Jets fan. He called me Monday night after another debacle, and he was just like, this is ridiculous. I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm like, well, listen, if tanking is the goal and if the goal is to get to Trevor Lawrence, I mean, we'll see. I mean, it doesn't do him any good to get a quarterback again if you have no offensive line and you have a horrible coach. I mean, it just seems like that's not the best direction, though, Fred. I mean, am I wrong?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that here's my hunch. I'm presuming that they're going to fire the coach. They'll have a new coach. And I think whoever that new coach is in the offseason is going to have to really evaluate Sam Darnold. I mean, I don't know if someone thinks that Sam Darnold could still make it with better offensive line and better coaching system. I mean, they could always keep him, or they could try to trade him for something, too. I mean, that's a very big question. I don't know if it's a done deal that they're going to go for Trevor Lawrence. I mean, if they think Sam Darnold's the guy, I mean, see, again, I'm a little nervous about that because, you know, you have another quarterback just coming in and starting new. But I know you follow football closely, but I mean, what makes me frustrated as a Jet fan, you see a lot of other young quarterbacks who certainly seem to be doing so much better than Sam Darnold, like Josh Allen would be one.
Sure.
Fred,
what's really interesting is, I mean, how bad is Adam Gase when Ryan Tannehill was an absolute disaster in Miami?
Yep.
He leaves Adam Gase, he goes to Tennessee, and let's be fair, you know, last year, Ryan Tannehill was in an MVP conversation, okay? And he also got a big extension, and he's proven to be a very solid – I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer. He's proven to be a solid quarterback away from Adam Gase. So it kind of makes you wonder about what a disaster Adam Gase is.
I know, let's face it. Adam Gase made his reputation because he was the offensive coordinator for Peyton Manning. That doesn't seem to be a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly. So
not to mix sports. That's sort of like saying, no, I guess if you and I were batting coaches and we had Tony Gwynn, we'd be doing, we'd look pretty good, right? And it's the same idea.
That's right. Yeah, you know what? That's a great analogy. I like that. I like that. Fred, yeah. Listen, God bless you, bro. Stay healthy.
God bless
keep
you.
Up the great.
Thank you so
keep
much
up,
for asking me all the time.
No. Keep up the great work. And, again, you know, when I have a great teammate like you, again, on our team of Insider NJ, it makes working so worthwhile. And, again, I love your columns. Yeah. And, folks, if you haven't checked it out, InsiderNJ.com, when you scroll down, you'll see tons of work from Fred Snowflack. Do me a favor. Click on him. He's one of the best writers in the state of New Jersey. He's a guy I'm proud to call a friend, and he's a guy who always, you know, when he's available, is very gracious to come on the program here. So, Fred, God bless you. Thanks for coming on here, and thanks for joining
us. God bless you. Thank you so much.
And do me a favor. Please tell everybody you know how much you love Politically Direct, okay?
Okay. I definitely will do that. All righty.
Have a good one, Fred. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Have a good night. Take care.
You too. Folks, what a great episode today here with Fred Snowflack, certainly a guy that knows so much about what's going on in New Jersey and a guy that is as good as a writer as there is here in the state of New Jersey and certainly covering the politics here in the Garden State. So, well, folks, that's our episode for this week. And if you missed any part of it, don't sweat it. You can always listen to the episode at www.insidernj.com/podcast. You can listen to not just today's episode in its entirety, but also, of course, you know, all the great episodes of the two-time award-winning Politically Direct there at the website. Once again, www.insidernj.com/podcast. So definitely do make it a point to tune in here as we have some rain coming on the horizon these next few days here in New Jersey. So when you're home, you know, tune in and tell me what you like about the podcast. And you can do that by writing to the show, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, folks, at politicallydirectnj. Also, you can follow me on Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. And also hit me up on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Certainly brand new followers, tons of likes every day. And I appreciate your support there on my social media platforms. And also don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. 1,000 likes. That's right, folks. 1,000 likes and counting on Facebook. So you definitely want to check out the page. Right now I'm still under Facebook suspension. I should be off of that, I think, hopefully by the end of this week. And certainly, you know, I'll keep posting once again there and maybe pissing off Mark Zuckerberg in the process. So whether it's on your morning commute, ladies and gentlemen, you're getting a workout in, you're walking your dog, doing laundry for my students, doing homework, do me a favor, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget, ladies and gentlemen, it's real, it's here. It's the two-time award-winning Politically Direct. Good night. Morristown. Yes, all my good peeps up there in Motown, up there in Morris County. Again, folks, please be careful. Please wear your masks when you're outside. Please practice social distancing. Let's get rid of this virus as soon as possible. Folks, again, happy Veterans Day. God bless all our veterans for everything you've done and sacrificed for us. God bless you all. And, folks, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.